Today on Focus, we're asking why aren't there more women backing themselves in with their ideas? And why aren't there more women at the top of the tree in business, in government and other leadership roles? First up today, we're going to speak to Emma Isaacs. She's a CEO, an entrepreneur, and runs a global networking organisation called Business Chicks. And she's the author of a book called Winging It: Stop Thinking, Start Doing, Why Action Beats Planning Every Time. Good morning, Emma.
Good morning, Danielle. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Now, in addition to being underrepresented, as I said, as businesswomen, we know that women also continue to be underrepresented in government, on boards, and on the lists of the best paid workers. It's a problem that exercises the WA Minister for Women's Interests, Simone McGuirk, who has also been kind enough to join us in the studio. Good morning, Minister.
Hi, Danielle.
Now, I think there are a lot of issues to explore here, obviously, both in terms of what government and a broader society can do, but also very much what women can do for themselves. So, Emma, let's start with your book. You address many of the things that seem to hold individual women back. So how did you come to write it?
I have run my own businesses for 20 years now, and I mean, I believe everyone has a book in them, but it was certainly time for me to put pen to paper, so to speak, and start listing down some of the tips and tricks I've learnt from those 20 years in business. I wrote it over the course of about a year. In that time, I had my fifth baby, so it was definitely a lot of work, but we're very, very glad it's out in the world today, actually. It releases today. And we really, really hope that it encourages a lot of women to do exactly what you said, to have confidence and to have faith in themselves and really put themselves out there. But I'm sure we'll explore all of that very soon.
Well, let's start with looking at some of those issues that might hold women back. Mm. I think you start maybe with confidence.
Mm. I think the confidence gap is a real issue with a lot of women, and I see it from running the largest network for women in Australia in Business Chicks. We have a lot of our members approach us and say, how can I increase my confidence? I think one of the first places to start is by educating yourself in the world of business, and whether that means taking a conventional linear path educate yourself, or there are many, many online courses and different networks that you can go to access information and services. So I think it's important to educate yourself in business. I think networking is incredibly critical when it comes to increasing your confidence, and surrounding yourself with people who can mentor you and who can sponsor you and who can guide you. So, you know, I always say that you can't be what you can't see. So it's important to surround yourself with role models and to learn as much as you can. But really, confidence is like a muscle that you just have to keep flexing. You know, you try something once, it doesn't work. You go back again and you try it again. But really, it's just about trying over again and surrounding yourself with people who you can learn from.
Okay, well, we'll explore a bit more of those reasons in a moment. But Minister, tell me, what's your experience with women and the particular issues that might hold them back?
It's interesting. I think it's such a complex issue why in 2018 we're still, I think, internationally ranked 35 in world's scale for gender equity in Australia. And that's actually gone backwards. 10 years ago, we were 10th. So it's going to take quite determined effort to turn this around. And it is important to look at what women can do to put themselves forward and to make themselves visible and available for positions. But I also think the system has to change a little bit as well. Mm. And businesses have to change, government has to change. There has to be leadership at all levels of society if we really want to tackle this. What's proving to be a really intractable problem.
It does seem to have a lot of hidden snags. Tell me, what's your experience of women in politics in particular?
That's a good question. This is an example that I give when people ask about quotas and targets to achieve gender equity, and at the risk of sounding a little party political, but the party that I'm in dealt with this issue, or confronted this issue in the early 90s, when despite having a lot of women involved in our party, we still weren't getting women in parliament. We still weren't electing women. So there's a big debate, and there was a rule change that said that 30% of women of electable positions had to go to women. So we changed the rules and we made that mandated, and that was in the early 90s. And we're coming up now that the rules were about to change in the next round of pre-selections, so that 50% of our positions have to be held by women, winnable seats. Now, in the state, in the federal parliament, that has resulted in 48% of our MPs being women. In the state parliaments, 40%. And if we look at our other major party, the Liberal Party, they're at just 22% federally and 21% in the state. So I think that is an example where an organisation has looked at this issue and said, look, something has to change. There was a lot of debate. There was a lot of discomfort. People had to step aside for that change to occur, but we're really proud of that change now.
What's your opinion about quotas, Emma?
I think it's fantastic, and I think that's a wonderful case study to highlight. I think in business, you know, we have precedents with countries like Norway having mandated for board representation and having, you know, really turned the country around. And we know that companies that have equal or close to equal representation on boards actually perform economically better than those that don't. And it's highly contentious whether, you know, quotas should be imposed, but I'm a big advocate of them. I think once you set a target and once you set a goal for an organisation, or, you know, be that a political party or a business, it gets everyone to think around, you know, how can we achieve that and what would we have to do? How would we have to shape shift to be able to get to that figure? And instead of, you know, just being closed-minded and saying, oh, we didn't find the women, it makes people, you know, lean in and sit forward and think creatively about how they can achieve that. So I'm all for it. I think it's fantastic.
But that's the question, isn't it? That's where people hesitate about why do we need quotas if we can just get women to back themselves and go for it?
Well, I think, I mean, there's two parts to this. I hesitate to say it's just a women's problem. You know, I think we absolutely need men and women working on this issue together, and we need men to sponsor us. You know, one of our members was telling us a story the other day, and she was saying, you know, women can knock on a door as much as they want, but the handle is inside, and we need the men to open the door from the inside and let us in. You know, it's, you can have all the confidence in the world, you can have all the skills, the education, the knowledge, but if we can't shift the systemic challenges that face business and politics, then nothing is going to change. And I think this debate rests a little bit too heavily on women and saying that it's just our problem and our confidence that's holding us back. Of course, that's one part to it, but we really have to advocate for how do we change the systems? How do we give this issue more airtime? How do we create male champions of change and, you know, really try and tackle this issue together?
What's your experience, Minister? Do women back themselves enough?
Just repeat that I think that this is multifaceted. So what becomes really frustrating, I think, for everyone is that they just go, why can't we just do these five things, tick them off and we'll be right? And I'm in my, but you, Emma or Danielle or the listeners, but I'm in my mid-50s and now. And, you know, we were talking about this when I was in high school. Exactly the same conversation when I was in high school in the 70s and at uni in the 80s. And so there has been some improvements, but it's taking a long time. And there's a whole lot of reasons why I think this needs to be tackled economically, as Emma said, in terms of our individual businesses and the economy generally, but also because of our community. I think it's good. We want girls to reach their full potential. We want women to be appreciated. We want boys and men, I think, aren't served well by the kind of monoculture that we have in some organisations. So the reasons we need to do it are important, and the challenges, the reason it's so difficult is are many layered. And so women often will back themselves but face that closed door, as Emma said. But sometimes, we all have to deal with our own confidence at times and just put our hand up. And so, again, many layers that we need to address.
That example that I gave at the beginning of the show, I don't know if you heard it all, Emma, but I was talking probably based largely on sort of examples from your book where you have someone who's got an idea and it's going to require really putting themselves out there to follow it through. This is in business. I suppose it could apply to politics as well or any sort of commitment really. You have to, you're going to have to make sacrifices in terms of family time, probably. You're going to have to knock on doors. You're going to have to network. You're going to have to approach people you don't know. You're going to have to back your idea and back it in strong to get support. You see a lot more men, it seems to me, taking that challenge than women. And you, there's a myriad of reasons. I don't think you don't actually say these are the reasons why women fail, Emma. But you, what you do is say, let's change our mindset and let's have a crack at some of these things which would help you succeed. Mm. You've taken a different approach. You know, it's not the let's look at the negative, it's more look at the positive, isn't it?
Right, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in terms of my area of expertise, I've been an entrepreneur for the past 20 years and I've seen a lot of women start businesses and some scale them incredibly successfully and others not be able to grow much, you know, past a really micro business and, you know, probably not employing anyone. What I would say, I do struggle with the glorification of entrepreneurship that we have these days. You know, we tend to only hear the successful stories of people who, you know, have started companies and grown them really, really quickly and, you know, sold for $380 million. And, you know, that those examples are really far and few between. So, you know, I want to be able to tell the truth when it comes to what it's like to really run a business and, you know, paint a picture that it's absolutely is not always easy. There are so many ups and downs, and the reality is that entrepreneurship is not for everybody. It does take a tremendous amount of resilience. It does take a huge amount of resourcefulness. You know, I've seen people without confidence be able to run a strong business if they surround themselves with the right people, but it isn't for everybody. So if entrepreneurship and running your own business is not for you, then you're faced with many other career paths, but in business, your other option is to work for an employer. And then the discussion turns to, well, then how do we change cultures to be more female friendly? And how do we encourage, you know, more females up the corporate ladder and help grow their leadership? But yeah, you know, I think entrepreneurship is a really, really hard career choice. You know, would I do it again? I would do it, you know, in any day of the week, because it's given me so much and I've obviously learnt so much from it. On the question of sacrifice, I think anything that you throw yourself wholeheartedly into requires, you know, an element of sacrifice, whether you're an athlete, whether you're a politician, whether you're a business person. And, you know, that's a question you're going to have to ask at the start, you know, when you make the decision to head into something. You know, for me, I have a young family. I have 5 children under 9, age 9 and under. And
sharp intake of breath here.
Yeah, a little. But, you know, the way that I'm able to, you know, navigate my parenting and also being in taking on what I do in the business world is to just do those two things. And we unashamedly have quite a lot of help. You know, we live in America now and we have access to a ready-made workforce there who are willing to work hard. You know, please God, the immigration laws. Yeah, I mean, that's a whole other show there. But, you know, we have this ready-made workforce that allow women to work because childcare is both accessible and affordable. And we have a real issue in this country with affordability of childcare. And the system does not encourage women. You know, when I moved to the States 2.5 years ago, my childcare bill in Australia was $2,700 a week. And it's completely, you know, unavailable to most people. I was working to pay for childcare, and that was only with my children in daycare a couple of days a week and, you know, having a nanny and a private nanny at home, which I'm obviously very blessed to be able to have. But these are issues that it doesn't matter, you know, how much you earn. You know, it's relevant for all women who are trying to tackle both roles, and that multiple role conflict is a real issue. And I think if we could solve some of those childcare issues, making it tax deductible or, you know, loosening our immigration laws so we could have more people who are willing to work in childcare. And, you know, again, it's fraught with contention, but there's so much to be done in that area as well.
I must admit, I still think it's weird that the multiple role conflict is a women's issue.
Oh, absolutely. And you see it with, you know, people always ask me, the first thing they ask when I say I've got 5 kids and I run a global business, they say, oh, how do you do it all? Now, I can tell you my husband has never, ever, ever been asked that question in, you know, his entire career. And you know, I always try and anytime I see a successful man or a man holding an executive role, I ask about his kids, and he says, I've got two kids or three kids. I always say, oh, how do you balance it all? How do you juggle it all? And he looks at me with this sort of ashen look on his face and says, I've never been asked that before. So, you know, even trying to have that languaging and trying to open that conversation up with men and have them sort of, you know, have the sharp intake of breath as well and say, oh, wow, okay, I can see, you know, how different this is for a woman, you know, and also changing the languaging around. Sometimes I've caught a lot of my male friends saying they're babysitting their kids. They're not babysitting their children. You know, they're parenting in the same way that women are parenting. So I think if we can call out this languaging and just bring an awareness to it, then that will help shift somewhat as well.
Do women find it hard to share that role sometimes?
I don't.
No, nor do I.
Bring it on. I think so, and I think, you know, most women would agree that sometimes we have a tendency to be perfectionists in what we do. Not everyone, that's a really sweeping generalisation there, but we want to do the best for our families, we want to do the best in our careers as well, and what that can sometimes manifest as in the home is, you know, women saying to their partner, oh, no, I'll let me do that because I know what I'm doing here, or they feel that their partner isn't going to do it as well as them. So, I mean, I think that's an issue. You know, I think most of my friends are, you know, more than happy to let their partner step in and you know, do the lion's share, or at least do 50% of the work. But, yeah, sure, I've seen that.
I was just going to make the point that availability and affordability of childcare has been identified, including by the Committee of Perth, as one of the key issues confronting sort of women's participation in the workforce. And while that's true, I agree with the point that this is not just a women's issue. In fact, we need workplaces to be more people-friendly. The idea that men or one person sort of drives themselves and only works and ignores their family isn't good for anyone. You know, it's not good for our mental health. It's not good for the way we raise kids. So a lot of these issues, I really think we need to challenge whether they are women's issues as such. So I think that's a real policy issue for governments about affordability and availability of childcare. It's true. But I also think workplaces need to look at whether they are genuinely family friendly, and that includes the public sector. In WA, we're the biggest employer in the state. So I know when I was in running an organisation, it was pretty small, but we had part-time work there, so I thought that was good for women. But the reality of school holidays is that, you know, it all just falls apart. There's no, unless you're a teacher yourself, that's really difficult. So I really commend those employers that have looked quite creatively at this issue. For instance, one of the resource companies has said, look, let's contract people for the year. So you work so many hours over the year or so many days over the year, and then you can negotiate that in terms of length of days, some weeks, and depending on the school holidays. So you actually genuinely try and solve this issue so people can spend time with their kids, whether it's when they come home from school or on the school holidays. And that sort of that will then deliver some real diversity in workplaces. And a big organisation in WA, South 32, has dealt with some of this. And I've spoken to young guys who have said, actually, this is the reason that I chose, as an engineer, this is the reason that I chose to work for this company, because they had genuinely family-friendly policies.
And he can take advantage of it as much as anyone.
Yeah, he wants to spend time with his kids. He wants to get to know them and you know, parent them properly.
You're on ABC Radio Perth. It's 25 minutes past 10. My name's Danielle Bender. This is the Focus Program. And my guests today are Emma Isaacs, who's the CEO of Business Chicks, and the women of the author of a book called Winging It, Stop Thinking, Start Doing, Why Action Beats Planning Every Time, which is just out today. And I've also got Simone McGurk, who's the Minister for Women's Interests. You can join the conversation anytime. You can call us on 1300 222 720, or you can text the program on 0437 922 720. Peter from Maylands is talking about quotas on the text. He says quotas may be less than ideal in addressing the gender imbalance, but does anyone have a better idea? The Coalition is singularly unsuccessful in getting more women into positions of power since they are poor quotas. And Julia says female gender in nature is principal nurturer, and self-sacrifice is tied to that. We're hardwired wired for this, so it's unlikely. So she is unlikely to put herself first. I want to get you to address that in a moment. But another one here. As a woman who owned a successful national company for 30 years, I believe quotas are an insult to women. When offered a position on the industry board, I asked if it was being offered to me only because I'm a woman or because my input would be valuable. I was happily reassured and believe that I made a useful contribution. That's Vam from Cardinia. Do some women find quotas to be insulting, Simone?
This is the debate that always happens with quotas, the retort, and it's come up recently nationally when significant employers said, well, look, I don't want to have women on our boards. We don't think there's women of merit to put on our boards. And some of your listeners might have heard before that I've heard merit stands for men elevated regardless of intellect or talent. Because the idea about merit is that it's an objective measure is flawed. It's a very subjective measure. And what we know is that decision-making at a leadership level at companies is good for the organisation, and diversity throughout the organisation is good for the organisation. And to achieve that, we've tried to do it organically, we've tried to do it with goodwill, and it's not happening. So I think there is real merit to tackling that issue with hard targets and a plan, and then a way to achieve that plan. I was at something not that long ago. The Chamber of Minerals and Energy had been trying to look at their equity in the equity issues in the resource sector, and they produce a report every 2 years. And I was at that launch, and when I was speaking, I was asked audience for questions, and one of the employers said to me, look, what's government doing about this? I mean, this is just not changing. We've been trying to tackle this issue in the resource sector for some time. What is the government going to do about it? And my response to that is, what's your company going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? Because I think what's important about change is that the organisation itself decides whether this is important for them, whether there are benefits for them, and then how they're going to tackle it. And Emma talked about Norway, where they have mandated 50% of women on boards. One of the unintended consequences of that is that there's been a stripping out of women in leadership in organisations to then put onto boards. So what I think you want is the whole organisation to say, what do we need to do to turn around the situation in our company or industry? And I think that's a really sound sound method to tackle some of the many faceted areas that we need to address.
Have you had to face those issues in your company, I'm presuming, Emma, as well?
Yeah, absolutely, and representing our members, you know, some 40-odd thousand of them, we are discussing and debating and studying these issues and trends every single day. I don't know if there's an alternative, you know, whether we to quotas. I agree wholeheartedly with the Minister, though we just have to draw a line in the sand and aim for them. I don't for a moment buy into the argument that the talent is just not there. You know, girls or young women are graduating from university, you know, more than young men these days. So we're a country that produces female talent. And this, you know, I want to say about this topic, it is hard work. It's not easy. And the other thing that we find with our membership, there can be a lack of interest to join a board, because if I'm looking at a board where there's, say, 8 middle-aged, and I'm sorry, diversity is not just a gender issue, but let's say if I'm looking at 8, you know, older men, they're generally white, you know, do I feel I have a place around that table? Do I feel as if I want to, you know, burst through that door and run into that meeting and sit down? And, you know, a lot of our members who are highly educated, highly talented, bring a wealth of and depth of experience and expertise to their different roles. They say, I'm just not up for that. I mean, why would I want to have to go and fight in that room all the time? So, you know, I think, look, by my way of looking at it, we just have to mandate, and, you know, those doors have to be open, and the men who are sitting in those seats of power, you know, I'd love to see them putting their hands up and championing this. I mean, I think they would, it would only do wonders for their personal profiles and their legacies to be able to support this movement, if you like.
Just touching on the idea of champions in government, in business. Simone, have you taken on the role of a mentor ever?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I think many women have as you move through your career. Spend time with people who are active in the community and get to know them. I've really enjoyed getting to know some of the people involved in my local schools, actually. It's been one of the highlights in my as a local member.
And how important do you think mentors are, Emma?
Oh, I think it's everything to be able to access mentorship and guidance and counsel, and to be able to have someone you can call on to ask for advice from time to time. I've certainly been very lucky in my career to have had wonderful mentors, both through structured mentoring programs and just through, you know, people that I can call upon, perhaps not in such a structured way, but people I can call up and tackle an issue or a challenge with. So I think it's really, really important, and I always encourage, particularly young people, to seek out mentors and not be afraid to ask for help. And I've also found that a lot of mentors actually learn more from the experience of mentoring than they do being on the other side of the table. So it's a beautiful contribution you can make if you do offer to mentor someone.
26 minutes to 11. Jack's called the program. Hi, Jack.
Oh, g'day. How are we today?
Yeah, good. What's your experience?
Well, I just wanted to say in this whole issue of equality, I find in Australia that a lot of Australians these days just want to be in middle management, and they don't want to get their hands dirty at the workplace. So it doesn't involve, I'm talking about companies with team structure, involving the employees as well as management and decision making. You're talking about getting more women on the boards. I think you get a pretty big issue, pretty long fight ahead of yourselves.
So why do you think people want to stay at that middle level? They don't want to go higher and they don't want to go down and get their hands dirty. Jack?
I just think that Australians, really, in the old days, they used to be work on the cliff face and be part of the company. But these days, it tends to be that, you know, they want to segregate themselves away from the workplace. The real issues, you know what I mean? But not see the company as a whole.
So that way they wouldn't, I mean, with the issues that we're talking about in particular involving women, I suppose they wouldn't, you're suggesting they wouldn't be aware of those issues either?
Correct.
Yeah, all right, Jack, thank you. Do you have an opinion about that, Emma?
It's hard to kind of generalise with that. The sorts of women that we, you know, have as our members, unfortunately or fortunately, they tend to be, because we run a lot of live events, so they tend to be from the capital cities. And my experience has been that, you know, most of those women are highly ambitious, if not as, you know, as ambitious as their male counterparts. And, you know, they at least want the opportunity to progress. It's not for everybody, but the hope that if they wanted to progress into middle management or to non-executive director positions, you know, it's got to be available to them. I think that's what we're talking about here. We want the option and we want the opportunity the same way it's available to men.
Can I jump in there? Because I think what is important about this is that we do often talk in this discussion about leadership and women on boards, but of course we really need to look at the whole workforce, which is, I think, Jack's point, that the idea that we limit people's choice of occupation depending on your sex is one that's really limiting for everyone. It's limiting for individuals, but it's also limiting for the sector that they're working in. And so the idea, for instance, with STEM, science, technology, engineering and maths, we want girls to be thinking about that as career choices early on, and they're just not doing it enough. And so from a government point of view in Western Australia, we've got a modern, energetic, talented workforce. We need to make the most of that. And if we're only drawing on part of the workforce and we're only drawing on one sex or one section, then we're limiting ourselves. So STEM is a good example. Why women aren't in some of the non-traditional trades, for instance, it just makes no sense. And I remember smiling when someone said to me, well, it's because some of it's really dirty. I don't know if they've seen what childcare workers do or aged care workers do, but it doesn't get much dirtier than that.
Well, women can be strong. They can get dirty. They can dig holes. They can push wheelbarrows. Yeah, they can place bricks as much as anyone
There was a good example. It just happened to me recently, actually, where I was at a service, an RSL service, down in my electorate, and there was a defence chaplain there who I met. I hadn't met him before. He was a youngish guy, and he was from overseas, and he asked me what I did, and I said, oh, I'm the local member, but I'm also the Minister for Women's Interests. And he said, oh, is that a thing? Is it that you have a Minister for Women's Interests? And I said, yeah. And he said, oh, is that just local? And I said, oh, no, I'm in the Cabinet and State, and there's one federally. And he said, oh, I've never heard of that before. And I said, oh, well, that's interesting, because in defence, you know, the leadership in defence have identified that, in fact, it would be good for the organisation to have a lot more diversity and to be drawing on the whole population when they recruit. So it's a big issue. And he said, yeah, but I don't think girls are really up for it. I have to say, I just don't think it's really working. And I looked a bit aghast and perhaps a little angry. But anyway, I looked a bit aghast. And he said, yeah, look, as chaplain, I get these young girls coming in and they're crying. They can't handle being alone and being away from their family. And I said, oh, yeah, it must be tough if they're young. I said, but what do you think boys do when they're feeling that stress? And we both said at the same time, they suck it up. And of course, we know for boys, it's bad for their mental health. If someone's stressed, they're young, they're lonely, they're away from home, being told that they just have to suck it up and get on with it has been bad for defence. And we know that there's been, you know, mental health problems as a result of that. So perhaps you could look at this problem differently and say some people cope when they're young, being away from home, better than others. Some don't cope and need some extra support. It perhaps is not dependent on whether they're male or female. It's just that if we really want a more well-rounded workforce, we might actually just look at some of those issues instead of trying to attribute some of those characteristics to men or women. And I thought that was a really good example of not only the change that's needed throughout the organisation, but just starting to unpick some of the assumptions that you make.
And that's really the next point I wanted to get to, Em, and I know that you can address. Is that cultural thing that we seem to have still, and as Simone, as Minister, you said right at the very beginning, you would think that having been talking about this for 40 years now, that we might have started to address some of the cultural assumptions that we make about the way men behave, the way women behave, women's work, men's work, and they seem to be the most deep-seated sort of issues to address. Emma, is that your experience?
I mean, I think that's a beautiful anecdote that the Minister told just then, and I think we can all learn something from that, because too often we are really hung up on stereotypes. And, you know, you saw what that young man did was try and deflect and put the problem back onto women. And, you know, we're circling back to what we started talking about, and it's really a problem for everyone. And perhaps just some nuancing of the way we view problems can really change, you know, change the whole landscape. I think that's a really great story to tell, and I'd love you to keep telling that, Minister, because it's really poignant.
I've got a text here just quickly before I let you speak again, Minister. Sorry.
You see, you've got a politician on here.
I'm a 50-year-old mother who left the career and industry I trained in when I had my son at 37. Having older parents who couldn't provide childcare assistance, I sought work in schools. From the outset, I believe our girls and boys throughout their education need to see that they have got real options for choosing the careers they can grow through. How many primary and high schools have male principals and mainly senior staff when the teaching is recognised as a women-dominated career? So I guess those examples start very early.
Yeah, they do. I mean, I don't know the exact stats of in the leadership breakdown of female and male principals. We have just recently partnered with an organisation that provides mentoring in these schools to be able to present a wide variety of career paths to students. And I know that's been really, really helpful in showing these students that, you know, a career path is not just perhaps, you know, nursing or teaching or a trade. So I think the more that we can put mentors and role models in front of these young students, that can only be for the better as well.
And you can't just talk about those things, you've got to live them. I just think that's so important, and that example of what's happening in schools is a good one. The other one of my other ministerial responsibilities is for Minister for the Prevention of Family and Domestic Violence, and in fact WA has very high levels of domestic violence. We're the second highest in the country, and we've seen some shocking examples of that just in the last couple of months of deaths, either domestic violence or violence against women. And in fact, I think most analysts agree that at the heart of some of that violence is a disrespect for women, that if women were genuine equal partners in our community, some of that violence would be diffused. And I think it's also important in that conversation to point out that, which sort of goes on from the defence anecdote as well, is that our current system isn't serving men all that well either, that we would all be better off having a more inclusive, respectful society. And so it's not just women progressing at the expense of men, but in fact we loosen the rules a little bit, and in fact people get to be able to express themselves or live the sort of life that they want to live. And that's really what you want. You want girls to reach their full potential. You want boys to reach their full potential, and not be limited by stereotypes. And as we've said, that's good not only for those people, those individuals, it's good for families, it's good for communities, it's good for the economy. And I think those levels of violence in our society, domestic violence and other manifestations of violence against women, show that things aren't right. You know, this is not a good way to be. There's dysfunction in our society, and we have to try and crack that if we really want to address those high levels of violence. So I think living those values is important. So organisations, employers saying, yeah, we want to deal with this, we're going to actually embody those values and we're going to be determined about change. But in our families, we need to live that respect, live that change as well.
All right. Well, look, thank you both. This is a discussion which I think we could probably keep having for another several hours. Emma's book is called Winging It. Emma Isaac's written this. She is the founder of and global CEO of Business Chicks, and the book is subtitled Stop Thinking, Start Doing: Why Action Beats Planning Every Time. And it's a brilliant book if you are a woman looking at some of the strategies you might need to undertake to get on with setting up a business for yourself. And thank you for joining us, Emma.
Thanks so much, Danielle.
And thank you also to Simone McGurk, who is the Minister for Women's Interest. She has got a lot of stuff on her plate. She's an inspiring woman in herself, and thank you so much for coming on to Focus.
It's great to be here. Thanks, Danielle.